Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of That Sounds Fun. I am your host, Annie F. Downs. So glad to be with you today. Wanted to remind you of a couple of things I told you last week. There are two conferences coming up that I'm a big fan of, and both of them have offered my friends a special code. So for starters, on September 21st through 22nd, the Story Conference here in Nashville, story2017.com. It's incredible. Can't wait to be there. Tickets are $600, well, $599. But if you use the code That Sounds Fun, the ticket is only $2.99, so 50% off. So if that interests you, come on to Nashville. If you're already in Nashville, I will see you at the Story Conference. And then also Catalyst coming up October 4th through 6th in Atlanta. Go to catalystleader.com. And your ticket price is $1.99. It's regularly $2.99. And the code is FUN. So just a reminder that neither of those people are making me do that. I'm telling you because I think you would enjoy those conferences. And if you want to go, I asked them if we could have a code. So that's how it goes. So just wanted you to know that that was happening. Today on the podcast, I'm really excited to introduce you to a friend of mine that I massively respect and honestly respect a lot more after this conversation. I already loved him. John Acuff has been a friend of mine, and his wife Jenny and their daughters have been friends of mine for years, and I just respect the mess out of him. I think he's super gifted and talented and driven. But some of the stuff he says today to you, I think, is really important, and I just I'm grateful for him. So his new book, Finish, came out this week. I am just kicking into it, but I am loving it already. Y'all know that I'm a big fan of perseverance, and so anybody who will talk to me about how to be better at persevering, I'm gonna love. So that is the case with John Acuff. So I hope you enjoy today's episode with my friend, finisher John Acuff.
Let's start with the Nashville statement. We'll go from there.
Oh, brother. Can we just
Oh, brother.
Not? I'll tell you my Nashville statement. I love Baja Burrito. That's my personal Nashville
been.
Statement.
I haven't been, I don't
what?
Think. No, I don't think so.
Are you serious? And do y'all
Is it in Franklin? Because that's
No,
the
that's
only
what
place
I was about
I
to say. How often do the Acuffs leave Franklin for a meal?
Well, we're renovating right now, so we don't do anything anywhere. We go to 12 South. And like go to like what was it, Taqueria del Sol? We go there some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jenny's ice cream, I assume.
Yeah, Jenny's ice cream. Oh, and then we go to Sano's for pizza. Like
Oh, for sure.
I like the Sano's a lot. Like I'm a big fan of that. So we get out, we do stuff.
Yeah. I believe you. But the same is true with the Lions and or the Smiths who live in y'all's neighborhood that like literally they don't come to Nashville.
No, people in Franklin are like, I can't go all the way to Nashville.
Right. Right. Do you know there was a pool party at your pool a couple of days ago, and Carrie, our friend Carrie who lives down there, was like, Annie, come down. And I was like, oh, boy, that's like 35 minutes either way.
Yeah,
I didn't
see,
do
you
it.
Do the same thing. Everybody does it.
I know.
It.
Everybody's so snobby. I mean, it's the same reason there's three Burger Ups in like a 10-mile radius.
Oh, I know.
Because people only eat in their neighborhood here.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, we have friends that are like that, that are like, I don't like as if they're different. They're not different.
Right. Well, I've got to eat at this one because it's not true.
I'm a local.
I know. We both are Atlanta formerly as well. And I get it a little more in Atlanta.
No, but Atlanta people drive 35 minutes at the drop of a hat. They're like, oh, something is like five exits away. Okay, I'll go. I think people in Nashville are weird.
Yeah, you're right. We're way more stingy.
Yeah.
But at home, it was like I'm not going to go all the way. I would have done, I was regularly doing 35 minutes to eat dinner with people. You're right.
Oh, yeah. It's different in Atlanta. You're just, well, your commute is like that. So you're like, oh, this is just our life.
Right. How many years were y'all in Atlanta?
6 years. Six years.
And what part of town did y'all live in there?
We were in Alpharetta, which isn't really Atlanta. Although they've made it part of Atlanta for the taxes because there's rich people there.
Right.
So.
And it does feel more Atlanta. I mean, it feels more Atlanta than like Cumming does.
Oh, yeah. Cumming is country.
Right. That's way up there.
Well, we used to always joke because North Point had a campus. We said it was like circle of life kind of thing where when you're young and single, you go to Buckhead. And then when you get married, you go to North Point in Alpharetta. And then when you have a bunch of kids and are kind of done, you go to Browns Bridge in Cumming. And you're just like,
would that be kind of similar to our Cross Point campuses?
Probably. I mean, like, I always joke, like, the stuff they do main campus doesn't work for us. Like,
really?
Nothing is as awkward as a spoken word, like in the middle of a song in a room where nobody is moving. Like, it just doesn't.
Because you go to the Franklin campus of Crosspoint.
Yeah, but like downtown, it works because it's a younger crowd. So like, the guy doing the cool spoken word, like, you're like, good for you. Like, you do it in that, you do it in Franklin, and you're like, this is terrible, dude.
Oh my gosh. I need to come down and go to a service at Frank, because I've never been to another campus. I mean, I've seen them, but I've never like been to a service. And I do need to do that just to see what it looks like for what my experience is at the Nashville downtown campus versus yours at the Franklin campus.
Well, but I mean, like, Annie, it's like anything. If you said, you know, if you said to me, okay, I'm going to speak to a crowd of 40-year-old parents, or I'm going to speak to a crowd of 22-year-old college students. Like, and if I said to you, Annie, are those different? You'd be like, yeah, those are different. The music is different too. Like, you know, so it doesn't make sense. I mean, I get the scalability of it, but that's one of the places that doing a satellite campus falls apart.
Yeah. In the transition of, you know, I had Scott Sauls on the podcast about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, talking about why you stay at a church when things get really hard. And he said, when you stay at a church, when things get hard, it's when you grow up. Do you feel like you experienced, did you and Jenny and the girls feel like you experienced some of that remaining at Crosspoint? Or was the experience different because you were at the Franklin campus? Or what was y'all's experience in the year that we were between pastors?
Yeah, the experience is different in Franklin. It's actually interesting. We were less connected to the pastor because we are a video campus. So like, we never saw him, you know? And so like, and I don't mean that as an insult to that model. It's just, you have a different, like, if it's somebody you've seen a bunch of times or somebody who's just a concept on a video, it's different. So I was really surprised. Like, I think we experienced less like, oh no, transition than other campuses did because we have a video relationship and we were like, oh, it's all right. You know, it's a video.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I was fine with it.
Yeah. And it seemed like it was more impactful at the campus where the preaching is live.
Yeah. Cause like, again, like there's the live and there's also like, he's in the lobby. So that's, you know, like there's some things I like about video campuses and some things I'm just like, it doesn't work. Jenny and I talked about that. We were both kind of like, oh, that's weird. Like, we don't feel as disconnected. And part of it is I got my campus guy, you know? So I feel like Crosspoint does a good job giving the campus people a chance to be out in front. And so like, that was helpful to me.
Yeah. And I love y'all's Franklin campus guy.
Yeah. He's great. I mean, he's like 19, but he's awesome.
He does look incredibly young.
I always tease him. Like, he's not young in that you're like, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. I think he's young and like smart and fun. And like, so no, I'm such a big fan. If anything, I wish that we had the same music people. Like, I don't like that we have to switch them constantly. That's one of the places that a satellite campus suffers.
Because if you had consistency, like with worship team, like you do with a campus pastor, it would feel more like a
you'd feel like, okay, we have somebody. We're like every week, there's nobody to develop a relationship with. So I just think that's
so interesting.
Now, granted, like, good grief, we have amazing talent in Nashville. I'm not saying that at all.
Right. It's not like you're like, oh, that guy, he's terrible.
The 42nd most talented person. Like,
right.
You know, we're very spoiled in Nashville.
We are. I'm so grateful. I always think it when they put someone new on stage to sing, I'm always like, I've never heard the, oh, they're also incredibly good. Yeah. Of course they are.
We have such talented people. So I got nothing but good things to say about our worship leaders.
You know, I think our campus, and I personally was, and I'm sure you are too, affected by our pastor switching and getting a new pastor. But I feel like we've come out of that season with a lot of new things that I understand that I didn't understand before. And just an appreciation for how the local church can take care of each other.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I've got nothing but good things to say about the elders and how they worked on things. And so, yeah, I feel very, I mean, you know, just personally feel very fortunate for how, you know, how they handle that. So, yeah, I've been super, I mean, and I'm excited about Kevin. So, yeah, I think it's all looking up.
Yeah, I agree. I'm thrilled. Okay, you said y'all are doing a house renovation. Are y'all like Chip and Joanna?
No. Jenny is. I'm not. Jenny, you know, she has her master's in construction.
Does she?
She's more Joanna than Joanna. Like,
wow.
Jenny grew up building houses. She used to build like million-dollar places in Boston. Like, she's hardcore into it.
Your wife is unbelievable to me.
Well, she has her undergrad in photojournalism and her master's in construction management. She got a full ride to Georgia Tech as like one of the only women in that industry. So like, she's good at it. I'm a writer. What do I know?
Right. I mean, it's just amazing because she also sews everything and
she cooks tons of great food. She wears crazy sweaters like that she makes.
Yeah, she does wear crazy sweaters. Man, she's married a very talented woman.
A lot going on.
It's a good thing your kids are in school, so she has lots of time now the daytime.
No, she's doing, I mean, she's managing this house. But yeah, we moved to a new house in our neighborhood, and so we're renovating part of it. And so we're kind of in transition.
So are y'all living in it while it's being renovated?
We're living in it. We're living downstairs, and then the upstairs is renovation.
Wow, okay. Is that stressful or does it work? I mean, I guess it's short term, so anything can work short term.
It's visually stressful because the floors are covered, like all the furniture that's upstairs is downstairs. So yeah, in that sense, it's very stressful where you go like, and then like there's like the other night, the frame, like the drywall guy was here till 10.
And then, gosh.
And then Friday night, he's here till 10 and the framers came at 6:45 the next morning. So like,
oh my gosh,
it's stressful because you're always with people. You know?
Right. Right.
And you're never completely alone.
And do you know your Enneagram number? Are you an Enneagram guy?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like crazy about it where like there's some people who are like, it will change the world. I'm a seven.
I am too, John.
Yeah. It's probably the best one.
It is without question the best one.
The rest
but
of them
I
are
actually am
lame.
Probably one of the, yeah, they're all boring. Everybody wants to be us. That impresses me because you are so much more driven than I am.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
It seems.
Yeah.
So your wing eight must be really strong.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But I, you know, it's funny. There's things, I don't know. We have mutual friends that are building companies and there's a part of me that's like, oh, I need 30 staff members. And then I'm like, no, I don't. Like, for what?
Right.
Like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I know.
And that's like, their life is different than mine. Like if they have no kids, then that's a different life automatically. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. That's not like one's good and one's not. Like, I don't think that way at all. I just like, I'm good right now where I'm at. Like, I'm A-okay. Yeah.
Do you work from home or do you have an office?
I will eventually. It's under construction.
Somewhere under all this furniture is office.
That's the plan long term. It's going to be upstairs. But a lot of times, like I wrote my last book at a coffee shop in Franklin.
Really? The whole thing?
Yeah, I would say I wrote 90% of it there. And the other 10% might have been travel, you know? Like, you end up, you know how it is. Like, you bring a huge set of pages to edit on the road. And you're I'm going to redline these. And that's what you do.
Airplanes are great for me writing and editing because the only way I get the internet is if I pay for it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm cheap enough to usually go like, so are you willing to pay $15.99 just to procrastinate? No, ma'am, you are not.
Yeah,
do
just
not
for
you
like,
dare.
It's not worth it.
Right, because like, it's slow and sometimes it doesn't work.
Oh,
and,
it's not good.
I mean,
no, it's
no,
not. And
it's not.
You don't get half the features. Like,
right.
And it's like stupid pages that you're like, how is that? Like, that shouldn't be a special part of the internet, you know?
That's right. And so instead, I'd make myself edit and write and do all the things. Do you like the editing process of books?
I like that it makes your book better.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like any part of the book process. Like, it's hard.
Really? Yeah, it's hard. Man, I'm glad to hear you say that because I know that as a real human in your life, but I feel like you are really good at encouraging people, like with the speaker list you have going, the writers, all these groups that you're kind of mentoring online. I'm glad to hear you say you think it's hard because I think that it looks like you're so good at helping other people do it, it must not be hard for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't. Like, Jenny's always like, oh, you're such a jerk when you write a book and you're a jerk when you have to go sell it. I'm like, well, And she didn't use the word jerk. I'm being polite
for the listeners'
tender.
Well,
ears.
She's a construction lady. What do we expect, right?
I know, right? I don't know. I think it's really hard, and I think here's the problem with publishing. And I don't mean it's like a problem with publishers. I just mean like the book industry is difficult. You don't control the miracle. It's like this. They come to you and they go, hey, we're going to give you a bunch of money and we want you to get rocks from the planet of Venus. And you're like, all right, totally. So then like for 2 years, you build the tallest ladder possible to get to Venus. And they come back and they're like, that's a tall ladder, but you're still 90,000 miles off. And you're like, I know. And like, you can't get to Venus people go, well, why did that book sell a million copies? Who knows?
Right.
So I know that's the challenge. I know my effort generates X amount of sales, but it's like anything else. Like our mutual friend, Dave Barnes, do you think he wasn't trying to get another number one since God Gave Me You? He's had one
right.
with his latest song, which is awesome, but it's not like he was doing something differently. If anything, he was trying harder. He doesn't control that miracle. I mean, Ben Rector and Brand New, he wrote a really good song, but he doesn't control that. Like Moana and Disney is like, hey, we want to put this so that's the problem with the creative arts. And it's a lot of things. It's true of a lot of things, but it's especially true for us.
I think you're right. I warn people. I just finished writing a really, and I'm not, I mean, you know me well enough, John, that I really mean this, a really bad first draft of a book. And I warned people the week before I really dove in, where I was like, you guys, this is when I become a version of me that I don't like very much. And I've tried to control her and I've tried to change her and it just never works. I just am a little bit different when I'm writing a book. Have you come up with a way to handle, because it's like everyone in our world gets a little shrapnel when we're in those seasons.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like the week you release it. So I'm kind of in the middle of that right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of reminds me on a larger scale. It used to be when I first started speaking, first couple of years, really, I couldn't look at my email or take phone calls before I spoke. Cause I would be so mad. Every little thing would bother me cause I was stressed. And now I'm a little better at it, but it's the same thing where if you've got a huge project, I mean, that's what I say to anybody. What's the thing you're avoiding? If you're freaking out, road rage is just because you haven't dealt with something else in your life. No one is that angry about a turn signal. Just means you and your husband aren't talking or vice versa, you know?
Right. So, okay, well, let me then ask you. So when we are bothered by our book, is it something else or is it the book and everything else suffers? Do you think it's revealing something else on the inside?
No, I think it's usually the book. I mean, there's just pressure. Think about it this way. If you're an accountant at a job.
Praise God we're not accountants.
Yeah. But if you're an accountant, you get an annual review where 1 to 3 people judge your performance. If you're a writer, everyone on Amazon can tell you you suck. Everyone on Twitter, everyone, same with music. And now you could say the average person experiences that when they use social media, sure, but they're not creating a thing. When you create a thing, it's a lightning rod for stuff.
Right.
And you go, okay, everybody judge this. I remember Tim Sanders told me, Tim Sanders had talked to Kurt Vonnegut about this, and Kurt Vonnegut said that if Amazon reviews existed when Mark Twain was alive, Twain would have killed himself.
Mm.
I always tell people, this is new. 30 years ago, you couldn't leave a review next to the buy button and change somebody buying it. During Twain's day, a review was a newspaper guy who was trained in that and was a professional. I always tell people, especially authors, if you want to feel better about your reviews, call them what they are, Amazon opinions. They're not reviews.
Oh, that's a good line.
Review, has weight to it. It's not a review. It's an opinion. And once you do that, you go, oh, what am I worried about? It's an opinion.
Right. Do you read yours? Do you read your Amazon opinions?
Not really.
Yeah, I just don't.
Seth Godin doesn't, and if he doesn't,
Thank you. I quote you all the time, John, because you're the one who told me don't believe the top 10% or the bottom 10%.
Yeah. So there's some, and that's not because I don't believe them. I saw some on one book I wrote and I was like, that's a pretty good thought. The person's right. They're not wrong. So I think sometimes it's helpful but I'm not going to take their opinion. I don't need it in there. I'd rather if somebody who's, if a friend of mine goes, I didn't like your last book and here's why, boy, I am going to respond to that. But if like a stranger does,
Right. I mean, I think that's why I actually am making a change. I just had 3 weeks off from work and to kind of assess some things I needed to change to make sure I could do this marathon long term. And one of the things I'm doing is taking email off my phone because I just need some separation. And what I'm saying to people is, well, my family has my phone number. Right. So the people, the same people like what you're saying about if they read your book and they can look you in the face and tell you about it, that's going to be a different response from you than an Amazon review. And the same is true for my real life of like people can get me 24 hours a day if we have the same last name.
Yeah, exactly.
And other than that, I need some better boundaries so that I feel like a better human all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I had it off for 10 days, like, but the problem was I couldn't figure out how to like have Gmail off but still get calendar updates, like they are connected somehow.
Oh shoot. Yeah.
And so I couldn't, like, that was the only problem I had. And I'm sure there's a solution. I just didn't want to spend 2 seconds thinking about it.
Thank you. No kidding. Can we talk about Finish?
Sure.
In my last book, Looking for Lovely, I talked a ton about perseverance because I'm a big believer that, well, my life totally changed when I quit quitting. Kind of talk about what you've seen about the power of finishing what you start.
Yeah, well, one, nobody does it. The University of Scranton studied it. 92% of New Year's resolutions fail, which is interesting because if something else in life had that high a failure rate, you wouldn't do it or you'd do it differently.
Right,
like
right.
If 92% of your friends got bit by sharks, you'd be like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not
right,
gonna
I'm
get
not
going to
swim there. Yeah.
But we fail every year and we don't change it. And so nobody does it. I'm convinced it's like it makes you more valuable than just about anybody else. Like it's the best way to do the things you want. And it's not impossible. And here's what I'd say. So the problem is when you make a goal, it's never just a goal. It's a promise. You made a promise to yourself. And when you don't keep the goal, you broke the promise. And you start to not trust the person you spend the most time with, which is you.
Yeah,
in the same way that if a parent said, I'll pick you up after soccer and they never came, you wouldn't believe them the next time. If a friend said, let's grab coffee and they never showed up, you wouldn't believe them the next time. So that's the problem. And that's why, you know, scientifically, it's called like the Zeitgeist effect. You remember incomplete goals more than complete ones. So like there's a residue. So the reason your next diet doesn't work is because your last diet didn't either. And now, and you don't trust yourself. So when you say to yourself, hey, we're going to do a diet, you're inside, you're like, sure, we're going to like, I know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I have a ton of friends who listen that are writers as, you know, and want to write books. And I'm sure you've had this conversation before, but I have friends who will say to me like, I mean, I started writing a book, but then I And how do we help people finish what they start?
Well, I mean, sometimes they've started the wrong thing. Sometimes, you know, statistically, like a lot of times people have the wrong goals. Sometimes they're too big. Part of the problem is we have all these broken myths about goals, like go big or go home or shoot for the moon so you'll land amongst the stars.
Oh, I hate that one. Yeah. I think that's so
dumb.
It's not
true. It's not true. You know, and so sometimes it's that we've come up with this crazy huge goal. And if we made it smaller and more manageable, we could get to the big results. We just would have to be more patient. Sometimes we're self-sabotaging. We don't want to win. My favorite thing probably I've ever written is a story about cuckoo birds in the book. And the cuckoo bird is a parasitic bird, which means when it's going to have a baby, it puts its egg in another bird's nest that has eggs in it.
What?
Yeah, and so their incubation cycle is faster, so the cuckoo hatches and kills all the other birds. So then the mother bird dies trying to feed this gigantic species. Like if you Google cuckoo,
the mother bird of the original nest maker?
Yeah.
Or the mother?
The mother bird. No, the other, the mother of the cuckoo's long gone.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like
yeah.
If you Google like cuckoo parasite, like the pictures are crazy. So
I'm totally going to do that today. That's fascinating.
So what you have to understand is that there are people, there are things you believe that aren't true, just every bit as false as the cuckoo in the nest. And so one of those might be success is bad. Like success is bad. And so every time I get nearly successful, I sink my own boat. you know, because success is evil or money is bad. Like you add faith to the conversation. There's a lot of Christians that like, there's a certain amount of money where it's sinful. And if I get that amount, I'm bad. And you go, well, that doesn't, so like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And so that's, to me, like that chapter about identifying, and the story I tell, a friend of mine who manages tens of millions of dollars, he's an executive, super smart guy. He gets a, got a new job traveling from LA to New York. And so he got new luggage, like cool new luggage like you do. And like a lot of cool things, it wasn't designed for comfort. It was designed for looks. And it was really hard and heavy. And eventually, like it hurt his back. And so he said to himself one night, he watched this woman walk through the airport and she was wheeling a bag. And he said, when did I start to believe wheels don't count? And his secret rule was that wheels are cheating and you don't get to use wheels. And so like when you put into like that chapter, like one of the women that I talked to about the concept said her secret rule is that being in shape is slutty and being out of shape is humble.
Wow.
And she said like women who are fit are skanky. And so that's the reason I don't work out. And she's like, I know that's crazy, but like, we're not talking about rational thoughts, you know?
Right. Right. Man, that is huge, John, because if that is implication across your whole life, what secret rules are you keeping and living by that are stopping you? That's insane.
Yeah. So that chapter is going to be really fascinating to see the results because it forces people to go, oh, wait a second. You know, and it can be a lot of times it's a parent, you know, my friend, you know, it could be a mom. Every time she saw somebody's nice car, a nice house, said that must be nice. And it was this little passive aggressive, like rich people are different. And, or like my friend's mom used to always say, for somebody to have a house that big or to have a car that nice, they must be doing something illegal. And eventually he had to say to his mom, like, that's not true. Like,
yeah,
that doesn't make any sense. Not everybody's a drug dealer, you know?
Right. I used to nanny for these kids when I lived in Athens and I would pick them up from school. And one day we were driving home and there's this mansion up on a hill. And I said to the kids, you guys, look at that house. And the younger son said, I feel so sorry for them. And I said, why? Why would you feel sorry for them? Look how much money they have. And he said, they don't have any neighbors. And I was like, okay, well, the story your family's telling you and the story that my head is telling me are two totally different things.
Well, yeah, because that what he's really saying is they don't have any friends. Like,
right.
Like they don't, they're isolated. Like,
right.
Yeah. I had a friend say, oh, that CEO makes $20 million a year. How do you think he sleeps at night? And I want to say like probably on a Hungarian down pillow mattress,
right.
Like probably pretty well.
Not so bad. Right. I know. So have you gotten to test this secret rule idea with any people? Like, have you seen, I feel like, cause what I'm thinking in my head, John, is that feels like that could have a really big wave of change in people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where it takes a little while because they're usually hidden. Like, I know one for me in my own life is I can't be too successful because then I'll abandon my family. Like, it'll mean I'm a workaholic. But I just don't think – I think there's a lot of room to work. Like, it's the same thing. Let's talk to young artists or young authors.
Yeah.
Authors will say to me, I don't want to become that loud used car salesman selling my book and – they act like there's only two options. You become that guy or you don't ever mention it. There's a lot of space between those two options.
Yeah, that's right.
And I always tell people, if you're afraid of being too over promotional, you'll never be, because the people who are too over promotional never worry about that.
They're not scared at all.
They're not asking that question. They're just doing their thing.
Exactly right. That's right. That's exactly right. Do you think this plays out as well in our faith life?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like, I don't know if there's anything we bring as many rules to as Jesus. You know, the whole thing with the Pharisees was what kind of rules? I mean, the whole thing with the prodigal son thing was the rules are different than he thought they were. You know, that the older brother says, you're going to do this, right? Like his rule, again, his rule was, I have a father who doesn't love me well, because his whole thing was, you wouldn't even give me a young goat. Like that wasn't lavish. Like, but his definition was, you're a young goat sized father. Like that's my rule. That's my expectation.
Yeah. Man, that's real right there, John. I grew up as the older brother in the story. And so I shy away from that story because it's still kind of painful for me because I feel it's so connected with the older brother. I still feel quasi-sympathetic toward him.
Yeah, that's one of those where, like, I'd love to write a book about it eventually, even though, like, God
really?
Help us.
Take that one.
We've just had too many books about that. But, like, maybe I'll be, like, the 1,000th book about.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a common. But I don't know. There's just things in there. Like that I still get jazzed by that I'm like, oh man, I hadn't thought about that. That's neat. You know,
there's in that one particular parable.
Well, yeah, like nobody notices that the father never talks to the son. Like the father doesn't say a single word to the prodigal son.
I had not noticed
and
that.
And I relate that to when God's quiet, we think he's mad, but what if he's just too busy planning your party?
John, write that book,
right?
Man.
I know. Cause like when he comes home, it says,
really
and then he said to the servants, get to this. Like, but he doesn't speak to the son.
Yeah.
But he embraces him.
Oh my gosh, John.
So yeah.
That's really good. I was just reading the other day and I'm kind of going through the Gospels because I've had this moment of like, I kind of just want to know what Jesus has to say instead of everybody else. And so I have been reading through the Gospels and there's this part in Matthew after Jesus or when Jesus is crucified and Joseph of Arimathea takes his body to the tomb. And it says Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene were sitting there and watched Jesus's body get put in the tomb. And I had never seen that before.
Yeah, I'd never noticed that.
Because you and I have both been reading The Prodigal Son for a lot of years.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
And I've never noticed that the father never spoke to the son. He only speaks to the older son.
Well, and that the older brother only comes into the picture because the music and dancing got so loud. So I always relate that to what if that's how we lived our faith? It was so loud and full of music and dancing, people had to ask questions.
Yeah, even the ones who already thought they were in the right.
Yep.
Yeah, the older brother, I feel for that guy. I just think, oh, bless him. He just was working hard.
but
he's
he was
also
doing
a jerk.
Things that
it.
The father hadn't asked him to do. Like, there's no way the father of that story asked him to slave, because that's the word he uses. Yeah. I've been slaving in the field. And, like, who asked for that?
You're right. Okay, to listeners, you cannot steal this book. This is John's book. He's
going
to write
funny.
it. So what's your hope for finish compared to the other ones?
I mean, like, I think it's the best book I've written in that, like, I commissioned a research study from the University of Memphis, and we studied nearly 900 people for 6 months. So, like,
no way.
I can say conclusively, like, hey, if you do this, this happens. Like, we studied nearly 900 people working on goals. And so I think it's the I think it's the best book I've written. That doesn't mean it'll become the best selling. So I guess I would just hope that, you know, I stay active on promoting it and sharing it, and that, you know, I think it has the ability to be super helpful. I just, most goal books are really boring and they act like you're this rational robot and, you know, like do these three things and this will happen. And that's not how people really live. So that's my hope, is that it's funny. It's, you know, but yeah, you can't, again, like, you write it. Like, I would love for the Today Show to be like, oh my gosh, like I saw this book in my doctor's office. And, but like, all I can do my part, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And you've done a lot of hard work on it already, John. I mean, I've just from watching and the amount of words you've put into it, people just don't know unless we tell them how many words they never see. How many parts of the drafts they never see, how many, I mean, I joke a lot that I wish people got my first draft and the final book when they bought it, just because I want them to see how drastically different they always are.
No, I mean, the editor is such a, you know, that's where, like, if you're going to self-publish, people are always, like, they want to rush past editing and, like, buy some marketing program. And I'm always, like, don't rush to the marketing of the thing that's not even good yet.
Right, like, that's right.
I would... You know, the problem is when we go, the walls are down, all the walls are down between us and publishing. Yeah, but editing isn't a wall. Like, you should still, like, if you said to me, I have $100 to spend on my book, I would spend every single dollar on the editing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. How did writing this change you when it came to finishing stuff? Because I feel like that's kind of a thing that obviously you wrote from a place of, like, you know how to finish more than the average person, more than the 900. But did it change you to go through this?
I always tell people, especially nonfiction, like, I don't know if it's the same for fiction because I've never written that. Write a book that you're better for the experience regardless of how well it sells. So, like, it's kind of, I remember a friend of mine was into home renovation and he was like, I'd rather do it myself because when it's done, I own the tools and I own the knowledge. So, like, when it comes to a book like this, I own the tools, I own the knowledge. So, you know, a simple way is last year I read 10 books. This year I'll read 156. Like,
I see you're on the path to reading a zillion.
Yeah,
that's incredible, John.
So I'm at three a week. And so I think I'll finish it. I've got, you know, I'm 102 or 103 in. So I'm on.
Can you tell me, I'm glad that you brought this up because I wanted to ask you, how do you do that? Are you just reading in all your free time?
No, I mean, you just figure out, like, you only read things you want to read. The problem with goals is people go, oh, I'm going to do a goal. I have to pick something that sucks. Like, most people's secret rule is it has to be miserable to count. Like, so I'll meet people who go, I'm going to lose weight. And I'll say, how? And they say, I'm going to run. And I'll go, do you like running? They go, no, I hate it. That's how I know it's good. I'm like, that's terrible.
Right.
And so I only read books I want to read. I use every medium available. Like, the problem is, again, another secret rule is we have very specific secret beliefs about what counts. So, for instance, if I post a Batman graphic novel, people inevitably online go, that doesn't count. And I want to say, according to who? Like, what's
standard? Why are you making the rules?
Who is measuring my private goal? Like, part of a goal is expanding your definition. And like a big step of a goal that nobody talks about is being kind to yourself. So like if I want to listen to an audiobook, that counts. If I want to read a children's book because it's secretly about adults, that counts. Like if I want, you know, if I want to read a book I've read before, that counts. The only thing I don't do is I don't skim. Like I just don't, for me, like I saw an entrepreneur that was like, how to read a book a day, and his secret was skim them. And I was like, well,
yeah, that's
not
what
reading.
I was going to ask you is if you're actually reading them or if you are buzzing through them.
No, I'll read the foreword. I won't read the acknowledgments because who does that?
Okay, actually, I read that very first.
Nah, I could care less.
I love that part.
No,
I love
so
when people
boring.
Talk about their friends. Oh my gosh.
And so I don't read the acknowledgments, but I read everything else. I mean, I won't read the study guide because half of the books that have study guides, it's such filler. Like they're not good guides. And you have more than one going at a time. Part of the reason you don't read all the time is that you don't want to read a business book at night. Like when you get into bed, you want fiction. So like grab a fiction book, you know? So I have a couple going. I make a game out of it. You know, if I want to watch TV, I say, okay, I got to read 10 pages first. And like, it's stuff I want to, you know, and I always tell people like, especially in this day and age, like with our political times, uninformed and outraged is dangerous. Informed and outraged is powerful. So like, if you're mad about something, go read a book about it. Like not to calm your anger down, but to equip it. And so like,
that's good.
I'd rather, there's a lot of topics that I'm more than happy to tweet about angrily, but if I'm honest, I don't know the first thing about them. Like I just don't. And I'm responding to like, to a tweet I saw. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. I mean, that's part of, I argue and finish that part of the reason we have some anger is because we're not passionately using our passions in other places. Like when you have no,
it's pent up and it's
pent
coming
up
out on Twitter.
And the only way to send it out is to do this thing. Now, are there a ton of things we should be angry about? 100%. Are there some that you're like, why can't I just let this go? It's because you're not doing anything else.
Right. That's exactly right. Have you read one that stood out as like, man, I was amazed at how good this was. It was better than I thought. Was there one book this year that you loved?
The Shape of Ideas.
Okay.
It's an illustrated book about creativity and ambition and promise. And it's gorgeous. And the guy who did it is a father of four in Wichita. And he's a full-time orthodontist. And he just does it on the side. And I actually went to him and said, hey, will you read my book, finish, and interpret it visually as a poster? And so he did and created these two crazy posters.
And can we get them? How do you get the posters?
Yeah, so I'm going to give them away at book events. Like when, like,
oh,
so
good.
When somebody comes to a book signing event, I'll give them one of the posters. But like that for me was fun. Like, and to see somebody see something you didn't see in your book, like, but yeah, that one I really liked. I mean, fiction-wise, there's like a spy series I really like called The Gray Man. I thought that was really good. I just got the new Jim Crow, which about what, like prison industrialization system and racism. And so that's one that I'm looking forward to like learning.
Did you watch that the documentary 13th about that?
No, a bunch of people have recommended it. I just haven't. I haven't seen it yet. I like The Genius of Birds. That was a good one.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard it. And that's fiction.
No, it's nonfiction.
Nonfiction. Thank you. Okay. I decided this over my little break in August that I read one Madeline L'Engle book, and I liked it so much that I've just decided, okay, I'm going to read her catalog. I felt like that was a very manageable goal just to read, just because I enjoyed her so much. I'm just going to keep checking her out of the library.
There you go. I mean, it's doable.
Have you read any of her?
No, I'd need to read Wrinkle in Time, right?
I think so, yeah, because it's going to be a movie. Am I making that up? I think Mindy Kaling's in it.
Yeah, I've seen an ad for it.
But she has nonfiction too.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So, I mean, there's just, you know, things like that. But yeah, if I looked at my desk, I probably have 10 books that are in like the batter's box, if you will, like that I'm going to read next.
So Did you read a faith one that really stood out to you?
Not really.
Yeah. That's fine.
Not that I can. I mean, I've read a couple. Like a friend of mine's that I liked, I'd say the one I liked Brad Gray's book. His was good. It was about Samson. Okay. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. He's a great communicator.
We'll link to all these, by the way, so people can find them just to make their lives easier. And we'll be able to see your tour where you're going everywhere when the book comes out, right? That's on your website?
Yeah. It's acuff.me/tour. So we've got 13 cities planned right now, but I think like we just added two more. So I think we're going to and we've had, my goal with those is always, I want to overwhelm the bookstore.
Right. Be such a gift to that bookstore.
Well, and it's fun because they don't expect it because I'm not famous. Like I'm internet regionally known. Like I can walk every street in America and not be bothered.
Thank you. Like same.
But right now we have 400 people signed up in the Dallas event.
So that's awesome.
Granted, not all of them will come, but that event is still 6 weeks away. So I'm going to bring 500 people to a Barnes & Noble, and Barnes & Noble is going to be who is John Acuff? Like, that's fun.
Right, right.
You know, like.
That is really fun.
And I'm going to try to sell a lot of books for that bookstore. Like, there's not a lot of bookstores left.
I know. I was really glad to see you're doing the Nashville one here at Parnassus.
Yeah, I love that store. And they've expanded. But I mean, my goal is always to fire code every bookstore I go to. I want them to be like, oh my gosh, this is pandemonium, you know?
Oh, that's brilliant.
So, there will be the one in Hattiesburg, Mississippi will obviously be smaller, but that'll still be fun. Some of these smaller markets are so appreciative. You get spoiled when you live in a big city. Musicians always tell you Nashville is the worst place to play because we're so jaded and spoiled. We're you make the trouble of going to Hattiesburg or Wichita or Kansas City, and people are like, hey, this really means a lot to us. Thanks for doing it.
And it's fun to go to bookstores there and be like, you are the people who are actually making it possible for me to do this job.
Yeah, it's really, I just enjoy that. And I think face to face still matters.
I agree.
Still has value. Even with the internet, it still has value.
I agree. Okay, so our last question, I love asking this to everyone because the podcast is called That Sounds Fun. Tell me what sounds fun to you right now. No, there's no limits. This is a very 7 question, John, so I need you to go hard 7 on me. What sounds fun to you right now?
What always sounds fun to me is skiing.
Like which one? Snow or ice? Snow or ice? Snow or water?
Snow.
Snow skiing, really?
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite thing. I didn't do it for 15 years, and then I kind of rediscovered it. And so, I bought my own boots. I bought my own skis. I'm going to, go to Colorado and Utah. Skiing, it's not easy because we live in Nashville.
Right.
Skiing is the best thing ever. It's so great.
Why? What do you like so much about it?
Well, it's beautiful. Beautiful. There's an element of danger. It's fast. I got up to 59 miles an hour on a pair of skis this winter. You feel like you are going. It's quiet. Because of our weirdo job, I can go during the middle of the week,
Right.
And so I grew up in the north. It reminds me of being a kid. We used to have ski club every Monday after school in the winter. We'd get on a bus after school and go up to a ski mountain and come home at 10 o'clock at night.
Really?
That was the best.
People up north have cool lives.
Yeah. So and I don't know, it's challenging in a good way. It's like somebody lives at the beach and is like, eh, I have to work for it.
Right.
You can't casually easily do it. And you get to see really cool, beautiful places that, you temporarily get to visit. I might not ever be able to afford to live in Deer Valley, Utah, but I can go ski it for a day.
Yeah.
And it's got cool stuff. Like all the gear,
lot of gear
is like neon and like cool. Like, I don't know. And you feel exhausted in a good way. And like,
it's almost like the swimming exhausted, the summer swimming exhausted.
Ah, it's the best. And so like, we're planning right now. Like, and again, my goal for this year would be to ski 7 days because I skied 5 last year.
Okay.
So we're not, you know, I'm not able to do it a ton, but like someday when I'm older, I'll spend January in Crested Butte, Colorado, and I'll ski.
Oh, I love it.
I'll ski like 20 days and that'll just be like, So
another beautiful part of our weird job is you can make plans in January and August and nobody cares.
No, it's just like, I'm going to take off next July. Like I'm not going to work it. So fine. Like I just decide that. Now I mean, our job is weird in that, like, I know I'm now out of book contract. So like 30% of my revenue just disappeared for next year.
Yeah,
so like there's not like most jobs. If you're a district manager at a tech company, they don't go, hey, by the way, Bill, next year, 30% less money. Like, you would be like, oh no. Like,
that is very normal for us.
No, I got some time to figure it out and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to see what it looks like and I'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm like kind of was talking about buying a house for a minute. And when the guy looks at your taxes for the last 5 years, he's like, good. Oh, okay. Oh, you know, just because they go up and down so much.
Well, yeah. And if it's been a good year, you're like, oh my gosh, like you're killing it. But there's not like, not every year is the same. And it's not that like there's terrible years, but there's definitely like where more money and more things landed in a year than like, and so like you control some of that. Like I control when I launch a course, but you know, like I don't force people to book me to speak. You know, like sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And then that's kind of it. And I go, all right. Yeah, like there we go. Like I'll figure it out. But I like it.
Yeah.
Like once you've done it. And I like companies. I spoke to a team meeting the other day at a company. I thought, man, it's fun to be part of a team. Like, so I don't, I'm not an entrepreneur that's like, if you're at a company, you're not dreaming. Like that's stupid.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. Hey, bud, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, this was easy.
Isn't that amazing? The idea of these secret rules that we are living by and that we are making our lives around. Yikes, man, that really has me like processing some things. I'm going to be thinking about that for a while because I do not want to live under that. I don't want to live under secret rules. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So grateful that John came on the show. Please make sure you grab a copy of Finish. What a great gift to give somebody for Christmas this year or for their birthday, just someone who you know wants to start some new things and really do that well and finish well. So I love it. One of my favorite comments that a lot of people have been making to me lately is that their like Amazon cart keeps getting filled up with books that they want, but they can't have yet because you're budgeting like a good smart person should. And I just want you to know, I love that. I love just drop this one. Go ahead and grab it. To me, this is one of those that you want to go ahead and read. So I am really excited and hopeful that a lot of people will read John's book. This feels like one of those that's not just for like business leaders or not just for people who are trying to make money or grow your influence. It's like, no, I want to live a better life. I want to be a finisher. So I love it. So I hope you will check out Finish. Also, while you're on Amazon, your friend Annie has a new book coming out next month in October called 100 Days to Brave. If you go to 100, the number 100daystobrave.com, you can see all the pre-order stuff we have there for you. Here's the thing about pre-ordering. It makes a huge difference. If you pre-order the book, Amazon gets an idea of how many people would want it so that that whole like out of stock thing doesn't happen. So you can go to Amazon, but you also know, as John and I talked about, I'm a big fan of your local bookstore. Go tell your local bookstore you want to order 100 Days of Brave from them, that you want them to carry it. I just am a big fan of sending people there as well. But pre-ordering matters to the author and matters to the publisher. So I'm not afraid to ask you that if you think you would like 100 Days to Brave to give it for Christmas, to have it for yourself, if you're just wanting to step into a braver life, would you go ahead and grab that? So those are your book options for today. I am going to, what am I going to do today? I'm going to go do something fun. What should I do? I haven't even thought about it, y'all. How un-Annie, am I right? I can't believe I've thought about it. Okay, so I'm not going to answer. So I'm going to ask you to tell me on social media. Tell me on Twitter. Tell me on Instagram. What did you do today that was fun? Inspire me on this Thursday to do something fun. I can't believe I don't have anything in my mind. I feel shame, and I'm sorry, but I don't. So you guys tell me. Use the hashtag ThatSoundsFunPodcast. ThatSoundsFunPodcast. And let me know what you are doing that is fun today. So I hope y'all enjoyed this conversation with John. Give him a follow if you don't already on social media. Let him know how much you appreciate the hard work he put into this book and get you a copy of Finish. So y'all have a great day, and please go out there and do something that sounds fun to you. And I will see you next week.